You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 453.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
And hello to our special guest, the mayor of Chickentown is here. Felicity, hello.
Hello. It has been quite a long time since I appeared on the regular Flopcast.
Felicity's here. Cornflake's here. I am here. Off we go. This is our annual memorial show, or shows, in which we look back on everybody from the world of pop culture that we lost over the past year. We shall celebrate whatever weird things they did here today on the Flopcast. But first, before we get into all the dead people, let's start with Cornflake. What do we have for National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
Well, yeah, I suppose this will lighten the mood a little. January 16th is Appreciate a Dragon Day. It is for celebrating dragons from your favorite books and films.
Yeah, we could totally do that. Did we ever do a dragon list, a 4.5 list of dragons?
No, and I'm just now realizing that we should.
Yeah. Have we ever done this Dragon Day for National Whatever Day before? It does seem familiar.
I don't believe so.
Maybe, maybe not. Whatever. I can still appreciate a dragon this year and every year. Why not?
Appreciate a dragon any old time.
Do you have a favorite dragon? Is it Pete's dragon? Be honest.
I do like Pete's dragon. that's not a bad choice, but I happen to love the DreamWorks How to Train Your Dragon trilogy.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, Toothless is a superior dragon.
Toothless is amazing.
I guess I got to go old school with Pete.
I also am very fond of Pete's dragon.
Nobody's gone Puff, though.
Or Puff and Stuff.
Puff and Stuff. Yep.
Puff and Stuff was a dragon. Didn't really look terribly dragon-shaped unless you really had to, you know, squint to see, oh, yeah, I guess he's a dragon. But technically, Puff and Stuff was a dragon, and he was the mayor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
Of Living Island.
Doesn't this HR stands for something, right? Like, I mean, HRH stands for His Royal Highness. And
yeah, that's what they were basing the name on. But I don't think it actually stands for anything. That's just where they pulled it
inspired
from.
Inspired by that.
Yeah.
Unless he was Human Resources.
That could be.
Human Resources, Puff and Stuff.
Yeah. A lot of Human Resources violations, I think, on Living Island. A lot of weird, inappropriate things happening in the world of Sid and Marty Krofft, only some of which involved dragons.
Oh, and then there's Falco. Falco the Good Luck Dragon.
Falco. Oh,
I thought you said Falco. I was like, what?
I did. I accidentally said Falco at first. And I don't know. I went all Rock Me Amadeus there.
I am changing this to Appreciate Falco Day. I don't care.
Falco Appreciation Day.
I appreciate the music of Falco, synth pop Austrian legend Falco, this day and every day. Thank you.
That's the best hijacking of a National Whatever Day ever.
I regret nothing. Okay, this is, as we mentioned, this is our memorial show, or the first of two memorial shows. We've broken these into two-parters for the last few years. Felicity, you missed the memorial shows last year. You were way too busy last year with weird mayor activities. Now you're back for the memorial shows. Good to have you. We missed you last year.
Very much.
You know about this kind of stuff, you know? There were gaps in our knowledge last year that you could have filled in for us. But now we're fully staffed to memorialize everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So here's how it works. I've spent a lot of time on Wikipedia to prepare this list. Well, I keep a list all year. I spend the whole year just jotting down whenever a celebrity death pops up. I add it to the list so that we can pay tribute. Because we tend to keep things light on the Flopcast, we don't like to spend the whole year memorializing people one at a time. So we just pile them up for the very end of the year. And by the end of the year, we mean January, because we wait until the year's completely over so that we definitely will not miss anybody, just in case that somebody sneaks in right at the last minute, and they always do.
Yes.
And I think last time the mayor was here, I think, were we still dividing everybody into categories at that point?
Yes, I think.
Yeah, in previous years, we would have like, okay, here's everybody from music. And you know, we kind of broke it into categories like that. Last year, you missed last year's shows, but last year we just went straight chronological. And that worked just fine. So I think I just have one giant chronological list. And we're going to try to knock out January through June this week. And then we'll take care of the back half of 2020 next week. The other element of this that we have employed over the years is anytime that we reach a name on this list and it's someone that we saw in person, or even better, if we ever actually met this person, then of course we all take a drink in their honor. And in previous years, I've always just had coffee.
Same.
But we're not fooling around this year. This was 2020. This was a miserable year to end all miserable years. And so we are actually boozifying for when we drink a toast to the memories of these anybody that we've met or at least seen live in person. We're actually going to take a shot of something. What do you have over there, Cornflake?
Can I tell you that I at least tried to follow protocol? I even have coffee cubes in the freezer that I was getting ready for the show so I could have coffee.
Yeah.
Then I look back over 2020 and I said, heck with this. I have a really nice Australian Shiraz and I have been drinking it since long before we started recording. So here we go.
Cornflake's been pre-gaming. Good to know. I have coffee, but I also have, as a backup measure for drinking when we hit certain names, I've got Glog or Glug, however you pronounce it. We made our own Glug again this year, you know, the way we used to.
I'm a little envious.
It's a Scandinavian mulled wine that we prepare. We used to do this every year. We'd make bottles of the stuff, and we took a few years off, but I made a big batch of Glog again this year, and that's what we have. The mayor has, you've got a mug of Glog down there as well?
I do indeed.
Nice.
We're recording from different studios here in the Chickentown Studios complex. So we've got Glog. Cornflake's got Australian wine.
Air Supply approved.
Absolutely. You know, if the guys in Air Supply were going to join you for a glass of wine, it better be Australian Shiraz. That's the one that they love. All right, let's do this. See what happens. Here we go. We're kicking things off from way back in January of 2020. The first name on my list is a big one from the world of music. We're going to start with Neil Peart.
Yes, from Rush.
He was 67 years old, only 67. And yeah, this is the drummer from Rush.
Yes.
Certainly a very, very talented drummer. I'm not particularly a Rush fan, but there's no denying that he was unique.
I'm a very casual Rush fan. Like, I know the hits, I know the well-known songs, and that's about it. I don't go too deep on Rush. But I feel kind of jealous of the serious Rush fans. Don't they seem like they're having a great time?
Yes.
You know, those real Rush people.
That is
true. It was a serious Rush fan that got me into Rush back in the early 90s.
Both the things I think of when I think of Rush are actually connected to Jason Segel, because his character on Freaks and Geeks was a drummer and amassed a huge drum kit and was proud that he had almost as many pieces or even more pieces than Neil Peart. And then there was a movie, was it called I Love You, Man?
Yeah.
He and Paul Rudd, they both really geek out about Rush.
I mean, Neil Peart was obviously considered just one of the great rock drummers, and this is, you know, crazy prog rock stuff. He'd do all kinds of bizarre time signatures and had the massive drum kits and all kinds of electronic effects. It was like a 360-degree drum kit that he used. The drums went all the way around him, and they rotated. So, like, the drums could swing around so that different portions of the kit could be in front when he wanted them to be. In addition to being the drummer, he was the lyricist. He wrote most of the lyrics for all the Rush songs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, he was a writer. And in fact, I read a short story that he wrote several years ago. It was an anthology of rock music-themed horror short stories, and he actually wrote a story for that anthology.
That's really neat.
Yeah, so yeah, the guy's a drummer, but also a real artist, a writer. And a very impressive musician. He's kicking off our list. For all you Rush super fans out there that we're secretly jealous of, that's Neil Peart. Cornflake, I know you wanted Ed Burns to be on this list, and I know nothing about Ed Burns except that he was 87 years old. Tell us about Ed Burns, please.
I don't know a ton about him, but I do remember seeing him as Vince Fontaine back when I first watched the movie Grease. He was the television teen dance show host where they get into that dancing competition with the hand jive. The guy hosting all of that, the really slick host is Vince Fontaine.
I can see him in my mind.
Yeah.
I cannot because I have still never seen Grease.
You're kidding me. How did I not know that?
You always tell me that about you and I always forget that.
We just watched a Soccer Channing movie the other night and here I am assuming that of course you've seen her as Rizzo in Grease.
Nope.
Wow.
Maybe someday I'll see Grease and then I will see Ed Burns. Up next, we have Buck Henry, was 89. This guy was a writer and an actor. He created Get Smart, I believe, the sitcom. And he was one of those SNL guys. He was not in the SNL cast, but he hosted SNL a lot in the early years, in the original 70s, Lorne Michaels years. He was their most frequent guest host. I mostly remember him from The New Show, the sketch comedy show that Lorne Michaels started during his hiatus from Saturday Night Live. He did this weekly sketch show called The New Show, and their news segment was called Weekend Tonight, I think, and it was hosted by Buck Henry and Dave Thomas from SCTV. Funny guy, a very impressive career. I didn't realize he was 89. Yikes.
Wow.
Yeah, I certainly know the name, but I didn't know much about his work.
Yeah, he's not. It was never a megastar. It's just one of those names you know from a guy who was in comedy and did an awful lot. Here's another cornflake name. Cornflake Stan Kirsch was 51, and I don't know Stan Kirsch, but I put him on the list because I saw one of his credits that I knew was important to you.
Yes, and that's the one that he's best known for. So he was Richie Ryan until 1997 on Highlander, the series, which started back in 1992. Highlander, the series, had me captivated all through the 90s. So Stan Kirsch plays Richie Ryan, kind of a motorcyclist and thief and a ne'er-do-well. And he finds Duncan MacLeod and the dojo where he's teaching swords and karate and such. I think probably the most interesting thing about Richie is he doesn't know that he's an immortal at first, like when he first falls in with the crowd, but he realizes that there's immortals among them. He really lightens things up just by doing kind of like knuckleheaded things, but he's fun to watch.
Well, I never saw Grease and I've never seen Highlander.
That's okay. I got us covered.
I got a lot of catching up to do. William Bogert was 83 years old. Again, a lot of these people are actors that were just in a billion things over the years. This is one of those guys. He was on Greatest American Hero. He had a recurring role on Greatest American Hero towards the end of this series. And I think I recognize him best from War Games. He was Matthew Broderick's father in War Games. Cornflake, for your purposes, he was Brandon Brindle, the father's boss at United Robotronics on Small Wonder.
Oh, there's a Small Wonder connection to this one. I didn't know that.
You are dominating the memorial show thus far. But we just got started.
Lots of people who matter to me died.
Yeah, we front-loaded the beginning of the year with cornflake people. I know you watched that crazy robot girl sitcom way more than I did.
Yes.
Because I saw like 2 seconds of it.
Loved that show.
So you saw this guy. Do you remember her father's boss?
Yes.
At United Robotronics. Did the boss know that he built a robot girl for his home personal use?
I don't believe so, no.
That must be a human resources violation, I would think.
For sure.
They're at Robotronics. Rocky Johnson was 75 years old. This was a pretty big name in the world of professional wrestling. I definitely remember seeing Rocky Johnson wrestle for the WWF back in the mid-80s. He was a tag team champions, him and his partner Tony Atlas. And I definitely know Tony Atlas also. I've met Tony Atlas a couple times over the years. He's a goofball. But they were the first black tag team champions in the history of the WWF. So that's cool. And these days, Rocky Johnson, probably best known as the father of Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh.
That's his dad. Yeah. Wrestling's a family business, you know?
My goodness.
Christopher Tolkien was 95 years old. And yeah, this is the son of J.R.R. Tolkien.
And he had been, you know, releasing volumes based on his father's notes for decades since.
Yes. Oh, yeah. The Silmarillion. That Silmarillion thing. Mm-hmm. That was assembled as this kind of backstory stuff that was related to Lord of the Rings. And he was the one that put all that stuff together based on his dad's crazy notes and the maps as well. Christopher Tolkien drew the maps for the Lord of the Rings books, or redrew them if his dad drew things that were inconsistent or missing things. I could never make much sense of any of this stuff. Did you ever try to read the Silmarillion? Because I tried and failed.
No. No, I did not try.
Here's one that we're going to need the mayor's help with. This is a big one, and we can take a drink right now, everybody. Reach for your wine or your glog for From Monty Python, Terry Jones, was 77 years old.
I have taken a drink, and it is actually Kevin who has seen him, not me, sadly.
Yeah, I'm not a big Monty Python guy, but I happened to be at one of the big wacky comedy shows at Dragon Con a few years ago, and Paul and Storm were up on stage with a whole bunch of other people, and at the finale, they brought out somebody like in costume, in a knight costume, and then the reveal, they pull the helmet off, and it was Terry Jones making a surprise appearance at the end of their show. And then they all performed Always Look on the Bright Side of Life together. So I did see Terry in person once.
That is lovely. I have seen Eric Idle perform that song, but It is cool to have seen Terry Jones. I think one of the characters he's probably best known for is the spam waitress. The restaurant that only serves spam.
I'm not a Monty Python guy, but I definitely know the spam thing.
Yes.
So he was the one just screaming spam, spam, spam?
Exactly.
That was Terry Jones?
Yes.
All right. Well, that's a very important credit, probably the most important credit of anybody that we're going to cover on this entire list.
Right. He was, they all dressed up as women from time to time, and that was one of his screechy female characters. But he was also... he did a lot of writing after Monty Python broke up, and he wrote the screenplay for Labyrinth.
Oh, wow.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. Look at that. That's why the mayor's here.
Thank goodness.
I remember noticing some Python-isms in the film, like some of the talking heads that Sarah passes at some point start to pronounce her doom, and she's like, just shut up already. And one of them goes, oh, please. We haven't said it in such a long time.
That is very Python-esque. Excellent. Terry Jones. Bob Shane was 85, and not someone I know too much about, but an important guy in the history of music, because he was the last original member of the Kingston Trio.
Oh.
Yeah, man, that'll take you back.
Definitely.
Today, I don't think people realize how important the Kingston Trio was in popular music. They were massive and influential. And you kind of get a taste of that old-timey folk stuff in A Mighty Wind, in the movie, the band The Folksmen, who were, the Spinal Tap guys. They were, the Kingston Trio was one of the main influences for The Folksmen.
Makes sense.
Here's your last man standing from from the Kingston Trio was Bob Shane. Jack Burns. This is a name that, again, not a superstar guy, but the credits on this guy go on and on. He was an actor and a comedian and a writer. In the late 50s, he had a comedy team. It was Burns and Carlin. That was Jack Burns and George Carlin. And then he also teamed up with Avery Schreiber later for several years. It was Burns and Schreiber. When Don Knotts left the Andy Griffith Show, they brought in Jack Burns as a replacement, like goofy deputy character. So he was on Andy Griffith Show for a little bit. He did all kinds of cartoon voices and stuff. He was a head writer on Hee Haw. He was the head writer for the first season of The Muppet Show.
My goodness.
Co-wrote The Muppet Movie. He was on that show Fridays, that competing sketch comedy show from the early 80s to compete with SNL. He was part of the staged fight that happened on Fridays with Andy Kaufman. He was involved in that.
Oh.
He was the Crash Test Dummies. Not the band, but the actual Crash Test Dummies that they made those PSA commercials with.
Oh, yeah. Buckle up.
Yeah, that was Lorenzo Music and Jack Burns.
Oh, I loved those.
And he was also on Animaniacs. He was Sid the Squid. That is a tiny sampling of this guy's credits.
That is in itself a lot.
So there's Jack Burns. I had to include him. Marge Doucet was 83 years old. She was an actress mostly in soap opera stuff, so who cares? But one credit that's hugely important for us, she appeared on 8 episodes of The Facts of Life as Monica Warner. She was Blair's mother.
Oh, yeah. I've been seeing her quite a bit, actually, as I rewatch it.
You're still going through Facts of Life, right?
Yes, I am.
Good, good.
That is a standout character.
As I've been warning people every week, we have several Facts of Life-themed episodes planned right now for later in the year. Fred Silverman was 82 years old, and he was a TV programmer, a TV executive. And normally I would say, all right, who cares? This guy was so hugely important that I thought we ought to throw him on the list because he pretty much dictated what we watched in America through the entire 1970s on all three networks. Like he was in charge of all three major networks over the course of the decade. Starting in the early 70s, he was at CBS. And I've heard Ken Reed talk about this, but there was what they called the Rural Purge, in which all the Southern rural shows that were on TV back then, they canceled them all just to try to turn the network around and attract a new audience, new advertisers. So stuff like Green Acres and Mayberry RFD, Beverly Hillbillies, Petticoat Junction, all that Southern rural stuff suddenly got the axe, and they brought in All in the Family and the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And MASH, you know, classic stuff like that.
That is a big change.
And he was also a huge proponent of the spinoff. So he was also responsible for The Jeffersons and Rhoda and Good Times, all those, you know, very successful spinoffs of the time. In 1975, he jumps over to ABC. And again, he's Mr. Spinoff. We get Laverne and Shirley right away. And we get the Bionic Woman. Oh. As well as the shows kept coming under his watch was, you know, Charlie's Angels and Three's Company and Eight is Enough, Love Boat, Fantasy Island, Soap, all that stuff. 1978, he jumps over to NBC.
Oh.
And now here his winning streak kind of runs out briefly at NBC because he also brought in Hello Larry and Pink Lady and Jeff and Super Train, which we've discussed.
Oh, Super Train.
Yeah. This was also when Saturday Night Live had that disastrous, their first season post Lorne Michaels did not go well. So things were rough at first, but he turned things around and we got Hill Street Blues, Different Strokes, Facts of Life, Cheers, Saint Elsewhere, Real People, which sort of was one of the very early things that you could call reality TV, you know, which, I mean, Real People looks ridiculous. We tried to watch an episode a couple of weeks ago.
Oh my gosh.
Because Real People is available. It's on one of those streaming things now. But yeah, it does not age well. But it was important for the time. He was involved in selecting and hiring Pat Sajak for Wheel of Fortune. Saturday morning TV as well, he had a hand in. And we're going to get to more of that later on. But for now, I'll mention that NBC Saturday Morning in 1980 was dreadful, as we covered it on the Flapcast a few months ago, but he brought in the Smurfs, which completely turned Saturday Morning around for NBC. So,
oh, I love the Smurfs.
How about this guy, though? That's how Fred Silverman spent the 1970s.
Yeah, when I initially heard about him and that he had been at the head of all three networks, that's, you know, unprecedented and obviously something that you could only do for a limited period of time, you know, be the head of all the TV networks because there were only three.
Oh, yeah. That's an amazing run, Fred Silverman. Kirk Douglas was 103 years old.
Wowie.
And I confess that I thought he had already passed.
Well, you can hardly be blamed for making that assumption. Like 10 years ago, he was 103. And I mean, most of his classic work is stuff from decades ago. And it's mostly stuff that I've never seen. He's known for Spartacus and tons of old classic movies.
And 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
I'm pretty weak on classic movies like that. I've seen a few, but not much. Too. So I have not seen much of young Kirk Douglas, father of Michael Douglas, of course. One thing I definitely watched him in, though, I remember watching on HBO in the 80s, he made a movie called Tough Guys in, I think, 1987, and it was sort of a wacky comedy, but it was Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster, and they were like old mob guys that just got out of prison, and they try to, you know, do another bank heist, and it was cute. It was pretty good. Dana Carvey was in it with them.
One of the things that I remember him from wasn't a big movie because it was a TV movie, but we happened to watch it in high school because we read the play it was based on. And that's Inherit the Wind,
which
was a play based on the Scopes Monkey Trial. And so I remember, yeah, it's kind of a fiery performance, and I remember enjoying it.
Amazing career there. That's Kirk Douglas. Orson Bean was 91. And does anybody have a better name than Orson Bean?
That is a name to cherish.
Here's the original Mr. Bean, Orson Bean.
The original Bean.
I first knew Orson Bean from game shows. He was one of those regular game show panels on a million game shows through the 60s, 70s, 80s. To tell the truth, especially, he was a regular on for decades. So I didn't know anything about him, didn't know who he was, what he did. I just knew him as a guy on game shows. I saw him just recently because I've been rewatching The Twilight Zone. He starred in a Twilight Zone episode called Mr. Beavis, and he was great in that. Another big credit for our purposes, speaking of the Tolkien family, in Rankin-Bass, the Hobbit cartoon movie, he was the voice of Bilbo.
Oh, Bilbo Baggins, yep.
That suddenly clicked. I definitely remember that.
Now you know Orson Bean. Kelly Nakahara was 72 years old, and the big role that everybody knows Kelly from was on MASH. She was Nurse Kelly. And so kind of just a minor supporting character, but she was always there. She was there for the whole run of the show, not just in the background. You know, she had speaking parts throughout the entire series. And everybody kind of loved Nurse Kelly, you know? She was Hawaiian. And mm-hmm. I also remember that even though she was just in a supporting role for most of the series, they actually gave her one episode that she starred in, which was nice, where there was an episode where she just confronted Hawkeye about how he was just always chasing after all the pretty little nurses.
Uh-huh.
And then she was like, hey,
she's got a point.
Hey, I exist, you know.
I like that when a show will mix it up and kind of show you things from a minor character's point of view.
Yeah, yeah. She was really good in that show. And also, we should mention, because I'm a huge fan of Otherworld. That very, very short-lived science fiction show from 1985, and she did appear in one episode of Otherworld. That would have been like right after MASH wrapped up. So, Kelly Nakahara. Jeanette Dubois was 87, and she was a regular on Good Times, the sitcom Good Times. She was the neighbor, Wilona.
I certainly know her.
That'll get you on our list right there. However, she topped that. The Jeffersons theme song, Moving On Up, that's Jeanette Dubois. She's singing that song. Yeah.
That's so awesome. I love that.
And man, that is one of the killer performances in the history of TV theme songs.
It sure is.
Yeah, unforgettable.
That's Jeanette Dubois. Cy Sperling. Here's a weird one. Cy Sperling was 78 years old. This was the president. Not just the president.
Also a client.
He was also a client.
That inspired a Sponge Awareness song.
Of the Hair Club for Men. Yeah, I have a weird history with this dude because when we were starting our comedy band, the Sponge Awareness Foundation, we made a song called I'm Also a Client. Just this ridiculous comedy song about the Hair Club for Men. Yeah, it turned out to be a hugely popular, relatively speaking, you know, at Sponge Awareness shows, people enjoyed our goofy Hair Club song because those commercials were ubiquitous back then for this hair replacement
you
system.
You could not escape them.
They glue fake hair to your head, essentially, you know, for bald guys. And because we were doing the song back then and we were just so amused by these goofy commercials, I actually called the toll-free number and asked them to send me information about the Hair Club for Men, which they did. And for years, I would get Hair Club catalogs and stuff in the mail. And we worked it into the Sponge Awareness shows because I had these big catalogs of before and after Hair Club photos. So we would hold those up during our performances of the song I'm Also a Client.
That's a violation of HIPAA.
That's right. Also,
where's HR?
One day, I got a letter from the Hair Club for Men that said, hey, great news, Cy Sperling will be holding a meeting in person for prospective Hair Club members in Boston. And so we thought you might be interested in attending. And there was a phone number. So I called the number and I signed up and reserved a place to meet Cy Sperling to discuss joining the Hair Club for Men.
Oh my.
Now keep in mind, I had like Richard Marks hair back then.
Yeah, I'm thinking about you back then. You would have had no reason to go to this club.
The biggest, craziest mop back then. But I just had to go. It's like I had to go meet Cy Sperling, you know?
Right. How can you turn that invitation down?
So I came up with a plan. My plan was, because I wasn't there to laugh at anybody who came. You know, that's fine. Whatever you want to do with your head, that's fine. Well, I just had to go meet Cy Sperling, you know? But my plan, if people thought, what's this kid doing here with the Richard Marks hair? I was just going to act paranoid.
Oh, I thought you were going to wear like one of those fake bald heads over here.
I think Cy Sperling would have figured out if I was wearing a joke shop bald cap.
Upon closer inspection.
Like a cone head. But no, I was planning on just acting crazy paranoid about my hair. You know, I was going to be like, oh yeah, there's a lot right now, but see, I can feel like it's starting to go already. And I was just going to act like I was that serious about it. And that's why I'm at the meeting. That was my plan, just so that I wouldn't be kicked out immediately. The problem is, and I went into downtown Boston for the meeting, and it was in the Copley Square area somewhere, and I just couldn't find it.
Oh.
This was back, you know, pre-GPS, pre-smartphones.
Yeah, it was probably, a meeting room at one of the hotels attached.
Yeah,
to...
yeah, it was. And I just seriously could not find the hair club meeting.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Never did find it. Oh, that's a shame.
So I never actually met Cy Sperling, but yikes, that guy made some very entertaining commercials. And he was also a client. Claudette Nevins was 82 years old. Claudette, we saw earlier this year in the movie Tough Turf with Kim Richards. She also did voices on the Planet of the Apes cartoon, which I devoured a year or so ago for a Dragon Con panel. She was the voice of Nova and of Judy. She was on One Day at a Time for a few episodes. Towards the very end, when Valerie Bertinelli, when Barbara got married, she was Valerie's husband's mother.
Yeah, you can follow that, I think.
And then Barbara's new husband, his father, who was played by Howard Hessman from WKRP, he married Barbara's mother. So it was like a mother and mm-hmm. daughter married a father and son. So that was Howard Hessman's ex-wife on One Day at a Time, was Claudette Nevins. Most importantly, she was on an episode of Electra Woman and Dinah Girl. She was the villain of the week for one episode. She was the Empress of Evil.
Oh, I certainly remember her.
So just a bunch of weird, goofy credits from Claudette Nevins. James Lipton was 93. This is the Inside the Actors Studio dude.
Yeah. I mean, how long ago did he stop doing that show?
Not long ago. I think it ran until just a couple of years ago. Yeah.
I had no idea that was still on.
Yeah. I think it started in the 90s and then it just ran for a couple of decades after that, I think.
I remember him coming to say goodbye to Conan, doing some sort of final show with Conan when he was going to the Tonight Show.
Yeah, he did a lot of goofy bits. You know, he just didn't take himself seriously, and he was happy to just make goofy appearances on Conan O'Brien's show and just be silly. He's come up recently. We've talked about James Lipton because on the Conan O'Brien's podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, after James Lipton died back in March, Conan had this crazy story about James Lipton because they went out to dinner one night and it was Conan was there and James Lipton's wife, her name was Katakai. James Lipton pointed to a painting on the wall. It was a painting of a nude woman on the wall of this restaurant. He said, Conan, you see that painting? You know who that is? And Conan was like, no. And James said, Katakai, as God made her.
That's forever what I'm going to think of.
So apparently that James Lipton, that was his thing. He liked taking people to this restaurant and showing them that there was a naked picture of his wife on the wall.
Wow.
And her name was Katakai. Katakai, by the way, on the 1972 version of the board game Clue, she was Miss Scarlet.
Oh, she's in Clue then.
Huh.
There's some weird trivia for you. These memorial shows, they take us in some strange directions.
I remember, I mean, I don't know what version of Clue we had, but I remember it did have photo representations of the characters.
Yeah, as I went down this particular rabbit hole yesterday, I learned there have been many, many versions of all the art on the Clue game over the years, of course. But at one point, Miss Scarlet was Katakai, as God made her.
As God made her. I'd like to mention at this point, we've not met many of these people who have passed on in 2020 so far. So I'm just drinking over here.
Just do what you need to do. There's a few coming up.
Do what you need to do to get through.
Barbara Martin. I don't think any of us ever met. Barbara was 76 years old. She was one of the founding members of the Supremes.
Oh, wow.
That is a fantastic credit to have.
At the very beginning of the Supremes. So she's on their first album, but she actually left the band. She got pregnant and decided to leave the group before the first record even came out, I think. So by the time the first album came out, even though she's on that album, she's not on the cover. It's just the classic trio.
Oh.
Is pictured on the cover because Barbara had already dropped out.
That's kind of, that's like being Pete Best.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, mm. it was her choice.
Yeah.
She could have stayed. They didn't kick her out because sure. she was going to have a baby. But she decided to go, you know, start her family. But she was there for the beginning of the Supremes. So there you go. That was Barbara Martin. Frank McLaughlin. Oh, finally, we can take a sip of glog. Frank McLaughlin was 84 years old. This was a comic book artist, and I definitely met Frank McLaughlin just a few years ago. I met him at a show in Connecticut. I did a ton of work for Marvel and for DC Comics over the years. He was mostly an inker at Marvel and DC through the 70s and 80s, and he was the creator of Judo Master over at Charlton Comics. And then Judo Master eventually became a DC character when DC bought all the Charlton stuff. And he created Judo Master, and he actually was into judo in real life. He practiced judo for decades. That's Frank McLaughlin. I got to take a sip.
I already did, but I'll take another.
Take another. David Paul was 62 years old, and he was better known as David Barbarian because he was one half of the Barbarian Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
David and his twin brother, Peter, were the Barbarian Brothers, and they were just these giant bodybuilder dudes called the Barbarians, and they appeared in a few weird movie roles here and there for a while. That their most important credit for our purposes is the Barbarian Brothers were in DC Cab.
Yeah, I was pretty sure that that was what you were going to reference.
That's the only place I know them from. That's that's enough to get you on the list, because what's more important than DC Cab?
Not much when it comes to the Flopcast.
You know, I mean, it's a movie with Mr. T and Irene Cara, so show's over. We love DC Cab. Max von Sydow was 90 years old.
I thought he had passed already.
Well, he was in, I mean, he was in one of the newest Star Wars films, but he had a role in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, he was in Force Awakens, Star Wars Force Awakens, and the Three-Eyed Raven in Game of Thrones.
Yes, yes. I couldn't remember who he played, but...
So, was that a guy, or was he like the voice of a bird?
No, he was a guy. He was like the, he was, would see through the eyes of the Raven. He was the one who could like see back in time, and Bran took over his role basically when he died.
I'm still so confused by Game of Thrones, and I saw the whole thing. Max von Sydow, of course, was in a billion movies. Cornfleck, I know you saw him in Strange Brew.
Yeah, remember we were talking about him in Strange Brew?
Yeah, absolutely.
Creepy.
He's the priest in The Exorcist, of course. I remember him in Hannah and Her Sisters.
Yeah.
He's Barbara Hershey's husband or boyfriend, whatever
boyfriend.
He was.
He's an artist.
Cranky artist who's disgusted by Daniel Stern.
And he got his start in Ingmar Bergman's films.
Right, right.
One of the classic early ones, and possibly his first film, was The Seventh Seal, where he plays chess with death.
Yeah, yeah. He's Swedish. Max von Sydow was from Sweden. How do you like that? Now, for our purposes, of course.
Yeah, you can't not mention this.
This is Ming the Merciless.
Of Flash.
Flash Gordon's Ming the Merciless, 1980, with Sam Jones and Melody Anderson. From the mayor, Cornflake. The mayor just for Christmas hooked me up with a fancy new Blu-ray set of the Flash Gordon movie.
That is fancy.
Yeah, can't wait to dive into that thing.
Also, it's extra features and special commentaries.
I love extra features. Maybe it comes with a Ming the Merciless bald cap that I could use to fool the ghost of Cy Sperling. Alan Bellman was 95 years old. Take a drink.
Wow.
I remember seeing Alan Bellman quite a bit at comic book conventions. He was a comic book artist way back in the golden age of comics. He started working at Timely Comics, which eventually became Marvel Comics, in 1942. And he drew Captain America comics for them and lots of other stuff. Not a superstar in the world of comics, but in more recent years, his profile has risen just because he was essentially the last man standing, you know, like he became an important figure at comic book conventions because there aren't many people left that were around back then in comic books in the 1940s. And so it was nice that I used to see him. He did a lot of conventions in very recent years. I would see him and his wife at Dragon Con and at several other conventions. He was out there touring and meeting people. So Alan Bellman from the golden age of comics. Stuart Whitman was 92, and I put him on the list because he's an actor. I included him because, last year on our list, we included Eddie Jones, who played Jonathan Kent, Clark Kent's father, on Lois and Clark back in the 90s. Stuart Whitman also played Jonathan Kent on the Superboy TV series from the late 80s, early 90s. So another Jonathan Kent is gone. Superboy was not a great show, but he was Jonathan Kent. He was a regular. That's Clark's dad. Here's a big one for us. Lyle Wagner.
Yeah.
Lyle Wagner was 84.
I was just thinking of him because, of course, we saw Wonder Woman 1984. And he was Steve Trevor in the Linda Carter series.
Absolutely. In the 1970s, this was our Steve Trevor. Yeah, we just saw Chris Pine as the new movie Steve Trevor. But here's the original from the 70s.
Lyle Wagner was Steve Trevor, the pilot, in the first season of Wonder Woman, which was set in World War II times. And then when they brought it to modern times, he played his identical twin son.
Yep. He played his own son.
Also named Steve Trevor.
Also named Steve Trevor.
Also loved by Wonder Woman. And was he the only non-blonde Steve Trevor?
Perhaps, yeah. Steve Trevor in the comics traditionally was blonde, but they didn't care about that for the TV show. They just wanted Lyle Wagner. Lyle Wagner was known at that time from the Carol Burnett show. He was a regular on Carol Burnett for several years. And then he left Carol Burnett not long before Wonder Woman started. Because I know the producers, the creators of Wonder Woman, they wanted him. They went after Lyle Wagner. They thought he'd be perfect for the show. And I think they were right, because he worked in comedy with Carol Burnett. He was a big, big strapping guy, you know, but he also had that comic touch. There was kind of a wink to his portrayal of Steve Trevor. So he was the right guy for that part.
Yeah, it was, I mean, loved that show. Still do.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, the whole... He's Steve Trevor, and he's his own son. And I thought that was the most ridiculous way that you could bring Steve Trevor from the past into modern times until I saw that new movie last week. But let's move on. Alfred Warden was 88 years old. Oh, he was an astronaut.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, once in a while I'll put astronauts on these lists because some of these guys have interesting stories. And Alfred Warden, get this, he is one of 24 people to have flown to the moon. He was on the Apollo 15 lunar mission. He was the command pilot. So he stayed on the ship when everybody else went down to the moon.
Oh.
You
know,
you can't just park it. So leave the keys in it, leave it running. Because, you know, the ship would just fly off to Mars and crash into Robolar. So somebody had to stay in orbit around the moon while everybody else went down and landed on the moon. So that was Alfred Warden. He orbited the moon 74 times in the command module. And this says, after his crewmates departed to land on the moon, Warden spent 3 days alone in the command module, becoming in the process the individual who traveled the farthest from any other human being. A distinction that he still holds.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Yes.
That is neat.
So if you ever feel lonely, think of Alfred Warden.
Oh.
Literally farther from any other human than anyone else has ever been. Yeah, man, not many people left that have been to the moon. That's why we have to go back to the moon and to Mars to meet Robolar. Kenny Rogers.
Oh, that's a big one.
Was 81 years old. And yeah, we love Kenny Rogers.
I am chuckling because when I came up with zombie Kenny Rogers a few shows back for Trapped in the House,
yes,
I had forgotten that he passed away in 2020. Oops. I had forgotten how fresh that was.
Really?
Yes, really.
You wasted no time making Kenny part of our wacky comedy bit.
Well, he's Kenny Rogers. You got
to
have him.
I mean, Kenny Rogers, going back to the 60s, he was part of the New Christie Minstrels. That was like a big vocal folk group.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And again, like in A Mighty Wind, the new Main Street Singers, they were very much based on the new Christie Minstrels. Kenny was part of that. And then the group he was in after that was called The First Edition. And he started having hits with them. Ruby, Don't You Take Your Love to Town, you know.
Classic.
That's a disturbing song.
Yeah, I do not like that song.
Kenny has some dark songs. That is certainly one of them. And then, man, the solo hits just go on and on once you get into the mid to late 70s. Of course, we're obsessed with The Coward of the County just because it's so goofy and bizarre and very dark.
Yeah, I don't like that song.
I love it, but it's just so ridiculous. And of course, when he started acting and making movies, they made a movie out of The Coward of the County. They turned that song,
which still blows my mind.
The Gambler, of course, they turned into several movies. I think 5 Gambler movies were made over the years.
Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that.
I always think of them performing the Gambler on the Muppet Show.
Yeah, with the creepy Muppet hobo dude on the train with
him.
Yes.
Yeah, that is cool.
That was really weird. So many duets he did. What Are We Doing in Love with Dottie West. He did one with Kim Carnes. He did one with Sheena Easton. Then, of course, the big one was Islands in the Stream.
Islands in the Stream, yes.
With Dolly. I remember a crazy song he did like in the mid-80s, I think, or late 80s. I saw him on some TV show, Solid Gold or something, and he was like, this is the weirdest song I've ever come across. And it was a song called A Planet Called Texas. It was like an alien spaceship kind of a country song.
That's, yeah, that's unusual.
Kenny could do it all.
What about Lady, written by Lionel Richie?
Absolutely, yeah, Lady from Lionel. Yeah, they were buddies. Kenny and Lionel worked together quite a bit. And when they did We Are the World, USA for Africa, they recorded that song in Kenny's studio.
Uh-huh.
Another movie he did in 1982, he did a movie called Six Pack.
Yeah.
Which I still have never seen, and I really want to see this movie because it just sounds so goofy and stupid. But he was a race car driver, and then he meets a ragtag group of orphans who become his pit crew.
I think we've talked about that on the show, and it's just very, very weird.
We have talked about Six Pack, yeah, a time or two.
But why haven't we seen it?
We've got to track this movie down. Diane Lane is in it. Erin Gray is in it.
Wow.
Barry Corbin from Northern Exposure. Anthony Michael Hall is in it.
Yeah, what are we doing not watching that movie?
He had all those chicken restaurants for a while, remember?
Yes.
The Kenny Rogers Roasters restaurants, which I know, I think I went into one of them once many years ago, and they're all gone now, except apparently it's still a big thing in Asia.
Huh.
Oh, like Tower Records.
If you go over to Asia, you can still get some Kenny Rogers Roasters chickens, evidently. I read his autobiography a few years ago. He did a book called Life or Something Like It. So I learned a lot about Kenny Rogers. He was married, I think, 5 times.
That's a lot of times to get married.
Oh, what a life, but absolutely one of the classics. And, you know, I'm not a country music guy, but I do have a soft spot for those country pop crossover people from the early 80s.
Yeah.
And Kenny was right in the middle of that scene. And one of the great beards in the history of pop music.
Oh, yeah.
So thank you, Kenny. Take a sip of your respective beverages, ladies, because Curly Neal was 77 years old, one of the best known members of the Harlem Globetrotters.
Oh, yes.
And ironically called Curly because he was bald.
Yeah, yeah, he was Curly, like Curly in the Three Stooges. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
He was a Globetrotter. He had quite a run with the Globetrotters from 1963 through 1985. I definitely saw the Globetrotters live during the run of Curly Neal. And Curly was animated by Hanna-Barbera back then as well because he was part of the lineup of the Globetrotters when they did the Harlem Globetrotters cartoon in 1970.
Yes.
And then
Super Globetrotters.
Yes, 1979, the Super Globetrotters, in which they would all transform into superheroes. And Curly's superhero character was Super Sphere. He would just bounce around like a basketball, and his head was just like a giant basketball.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Why don't we have that on DVD?
So Curly did not do his own voice on either one of those cartoons. However, in between those two shows, in 1974, there was a show called the Harlem Globetrotters Popcorn Machine. This was also Saturday morning. This was live-action comedy variety show.
What?
Starring the Harlem Globetrotters.
Oh, please yes. Tell me this is on YouTube somewhere.
There are clips on YouTube. I was watching them yesterday.
Nice!
Why didn't you tell me about this?
Absolutely worth a look. It's really, really goofy. And Curly, of course, was also there for the Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island.
I was going to ask.
Because that was 1981. So yeah, he was on Gilligan's Island playing basketball against robots.
I still can't get over that being a thing.
I loved that so much. So come on, there's Curly Neal. David Schramm was 73, and I just have one big credit on this guy, and that's the sitcom Wings from the 90s.
Oh, yes.
That was a good show. I was a fan of Wings. David Schramm played Roy Biggins. He was the kind of sleazy rival airline guy. Wings was Steven Weber and Tim Daly. They were brothers, and they had an airplane. and that this was another guy that worked in the airport.
I'm not sure I can picture him.
Yeah, it was good. He was good. He played that part very well. That was a good show, kind of under the radar.
Yeah, it was. I liked it. I didn't watch it regularly, but I did enjoy it when I saw it. It was, yeah, just a cute character.
Very quietly, it was a quality sitcom. And that was with Crystal Bernard was there. And mm-hmm. what's his name? The dude from Sideways? Thomas Hayden Church.
Thomas Hayden Church and... what's his name? Tony Shalhoub.
Yes, I forgot he was on it too. Man, what a cast. Okay.
Yeah.
We should all go watch Wings.
All right, I'm sure it's streaming somewhere.
Somewhere. Bill Withers was 81 years old. Of course, a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. And Ain't No Sunshine. And
Lovely Day.
Yes. And Lean on Me, of course, was probably the biggest one. Beautiful stuff. He also, I didn't realize this when I looked him up, he wrote Just the Two of Us, which was a hit for Grover Washington in the early 80s.
I remember hearing that factoid on a countdown once upon a time.
There you go. Bill Withers. Julie Bennett was 88 years old, did a lot of voice work in cartoons and some fun credits for us. She was Aunt May on the 1990s Spider-Man cartoon. Back in the 60s when Filmation was doing the DC Comics superhero cartoons, she voiced Lois Lane. And also, they did a handful of Teen Titans cartoons back then, and she was the voice of Wonder Girl.
Yeah, I remember watching those with you. Yeah,
it was weird because cool. Wonder Girl was on TV years before Wonder Woman was.
Right.
Thanks to those Teen Titans cartoons. Her biggest cartoon credit, though, I think would be Cindy Bear from the Yogi Bear cartoons.
Oh, yeah.
I just watched one of Yogi Bear's Christmas specials a couple of weeks ago.
She was my favorite character on Yogi Bear.
One of them. Yogi had more than one Christmas cartoon. I love them both. Here's one that the mayor, I know, was a huge fan of, and man, this broke our hearts back in April. Adam Schlesinger was 52 years old.
Yeah, this almost broke me. Yeah. He was, of course, in Fountains of Wayne. He and Chris Collingwood shared songwriter credits on most of the songs, so you didn't really know who wrote what, but they were both great songwriters.
Take a drink, by the way. I saw Adam Schlesinger at a Fountains of Wayne show once.
Wow.
And I saw him at an in-store performance.
Oh, you did? I didn't know that you saw him, too.
Yeah, I saw them when...
Take another drink.
Hey, can I drink twice on this one? This makes me sick.
Drink twice.
Do it.
But, you know, Adam Schlesinger was such a prolific songwriter and producer, too. He was the music director on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, so he wrote or co-wrote a lot of those songs. He wrote music for the Josie and the Pussycats movie that Kay Hanley sang. He produced the Monkees anniversary album and wrote a song for them.
Yeah.
The Good Times album.
Yeah, and also the Christmas album. And as if that weren't enough, when the film That Thing You Do was in planning, they kind of put out a call for songwriters. Hey, write a really catchy pop song with the title That Thing You Do. And his was the winning contribution. He wrote the perfect pop song for the era that was completely believable as a intensely popular hit that was, you know, the only hit that the band ever had. So I just think of him as in that perfect pop song. So, yeah, I really was sad at the loss of Adam Schlesinger.
Oh, what an amazing, remarkable talent to lose at such a young age. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, man, did so much great work. Adam Schlesinger. Honor Blackman was 94 years old.
And she was the predecessor to Diana Rigg on The Avengers. Of course, not the Marvel Avengers, but the British spy series. And Honor Blackman's character was Kathy Gale.
Yeah, I don't think I even realized that there was a pre-Diana Rigg lady on The Avengers. You were way into The Avengers. You know way more about this stuff than I think we do.
Yes. I think you're either a Kathy Gale fan or a Mrs. Peel fan, and I'm definitely a Mrs. Peel fan. Uh-huh. But Honor Blackman was also very well known for being a Bond girl in Goldfinger, and she was the character with the most infamous Bond girl name of all.
Oh, yeah, this is how I know her.
My note that I have here is that she was 38 years old at the time.
Oh.
She was 5 years older than Sean Connery and one of the oldest actresses to play a Bond girl.
Well, good for her.
Sure.
That's really great.
I knew her from Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh,
back
yeah.
in the 60s, one of those Ray Harryhausen stop motion animated monster movies back then. And she was Hera.
Oh, I never saw that one.
One of the Greek gods. Yeah, that's a fun movie. She did some Doctor Who also in the 80s.
Yes.
My notes just say Doctor Who 1986. That's Honor Blackman. John Prine was 73.
Folk musician.
Oh, yeah.
A legend in folk music and singer-songwriter kind of stuff. This was a guy that was off my radar until the mid-90s when I got into Dar Williams. And on Dar's Mortal City album, a song called The Ocean, he sings along with her. And that was the first time I became aware of this guy existing. And then I know my friend Mike was like, oh, yeah, this is a major guy in folk. And he gave me a tape like, here, you got to listen to John Prine. And then I would sing his part occasionally when our friend Kim Jennings from the Great Molasses Flood, she would perform The Ocean by Dar Williams sometimes, and I would join her and do the John Prine part.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's John Prine. Malcolm Dixon was 66 years old, an English actor with a huge pile of impressive geek credits. He was a little person, and one of his biggest roles was he was one of the leads in Time Bandits.
Oh, sure.
Strutter in Time Bandits. But he was also, he was an Ewok in Return of the Jedi. He was in Flash Gordon. He was in several productions of Snow White. He was in Dark Crystal, in Labyrinth, in Willow. He was in Oompa Loompa in the original Willy Wonka. In the London Theater, he had a long run playing Bilbo. Here's another Bilbo.
Oh, my goodness.
In the London Theater production of The Hobbit.
Oh,
wow. That's, I mean, he's basically played every significant role for a little person to play.
This is the second and not the final Bilbo on our list. Yeah. That's the crazy part.
It's an unusual number of Bilbos this year.
Bad year for Bilbos. But that's Malcolm Dixon. Mort Drucker was 91. He was a caricature artist, and he worked for decades for Mad Magazine. He was considered the best caricaturist at Mad. And I don't think anybody would argue with that. And a lot of great caricature artists work for Mad because they do those TV parody strips, you know, and movie parody strips. They have a bunch of guys who are great at it. Mort Drucker was the best. Yeah, we've talked about those caricature guys at Mad before, I think, just because the skill that that takes, because it's not just here, make a funny picture of this person. It's make 30 funny pictures of this person from different angles and with different facial expressions as they go through an entire comic book story.
Yeah, that's a good point. That takes an extra level of skill, certainly.
These guys had to be able to do that. And also, you're not drawing Rodney Dangerfield every month, you know? It's draw Charlize Theron.
Right.
But make her funny and make her recognizable. Yeah. The skill that these guys had is so impressive. And man, Mort Drucker was the best. Danny Goldman was 80 years old. Just real quick, he was the voice of Brainy Smurf.
That is one memorable voice.
That's an important Smurf. Pat Brimer, take a drink. Pat Brimer was 70 years old. He was at Dragon Con just a few years ago with the puppetry track. I went to see him.
Oh.
The puppeteer of the gopher from Caddyshack.
Oh, I'm sad that we lost him.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But we'll always have the gopher.
He was there at Dragon Con with the puppetry track that one year, and he brought the gopher puppet with him. And it was not the original from the movie, because that one he didn't have, but there was a later one that he built for a later project. So it was the same. It was, you know, it worked just like the original. And he had that thing dancing on stage at Dragon Con right in front of us, and we freaked out.
That sounds magical.
Yeah, seemed like a good guy. And he worked with the Crofts, with Sid and Marty Croft for a while. He worked on the Banana Splits. He worked on the McDonaldland commercials, which ripped off Sid and Marty Croft. Pat Brimer. Brian Dennehy was 81 years old. You know him from a billion things.
Yeah. He was ubiquitous.
A lot of different things.
Cocoon was a big one for him. Tommy Boy was a big one with Farley and Spade. We just saw him recently. We were watching Lucan.
Yeah.
Also for Christmas, besides the Flash Gordon Blu-ray, I got the Lucan complete series DVD set from the mayor. So we're watching Lucan, which is a show that was not around for long, about a boy who was raised by wolves named Lucan. But yeah, there's young Brian Dennehy. I had to like do a double take because I'm not used to seeing him that young.
Yeah.
That was one of his very early roles, I think, was on Lucan back in 1977.
Yes, indeed.
When you need a big, beefy guy in your movie,
you get Brian Dennehy.
Call Dennehy. Mark Barkin was 85 years old and a songwriter and wrote a ton of stuff. He wrote for Elvis. He wrote for Leslie Gore. Wrote for the Monkees, evidently, although I could not track down what songs for the Monkees he wrote, so I'm not sure about that. But his most important credit, and yeah, we just mentioned Pat Brimer working on the Banana Splits. This guy was the music director for the Banana Splits and wrote the tra-la-la, one banana, two banana theme song.
Oh, gosh.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Roy Horn was 75 years old. This is Siegfried and Roy.
Yeah.
Roy was the half of that magic duo who was attacked by one of their tigers, you know, many years back. They had that wacky, long-running Vegas show with trained tigers.
Disappearing white tigers was the thing.
They made white tigers disappear. Don't play with tigers, people, is the takeaway.
Please, do not do that.
But that's Roy Horn. Little Richard.
Yeah, what a legend.
Was 87. And there you go. There's your one of the absolute originals of rock and roll.
One of the first into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, yeah?
Yes, absolutely. First class. Yes, 1986, the very first class he was a member of, and rightly so. You know, Lucille, Tutti Frutti, the songs go on forever.
Was he in the Pee Wee Herman Christmas special?
Yes, I believe he was. Because, man, he was around. You know, he just kept working and kept touring. And just such an outrageous character as well. He was so funny. The little mustache, he had that little tiny mustache. And apparently that's where John Waters got the idea for his mustache. Yes, he got that from Little Richard.
And the little tiny mustache and the huge eyes.
Yes, oh, the big hair. And just an explosive, amazing performer. He would steal the show at every live performance that he was part of.
So much fun.
I mean, as far as I can determine, unless I'm forgetting somebody, like there's one guy left from back then, and that's Jerry Lee Lewis.
Man.
Because, you know, how many people that, you know?
From the beginnings of rock and roll.
Yeah, because Chuck Berry is gone, Fats Domino's gone, and now Little Richard's gone. Jerry Lee Lewis. Still hanging in there.
Holding up the fort.
He'll outlive us all. Martin Pascoe was 65 years old. He's a comic book writer. Wrote a million Superman stories in the 70s. He wrote some Dr. Fate, Justice League, Swamp Thing. When they revived Swamp Thing at DC Comics in the early 80s, he wrote Swamp Thing for a couple of years until Alan Moore took over from Martin Pascoe's run. He wrote for Thundar the Barbarian.
Yeah.
Steve Gerber, I think, is the primary creator of Thundar. But Martin was in the mix. And Martin is credited with coming up with the name Ookla, as in Ookla the Mock.
And is it true that he came up with it from UCLA?
I've heard that, yes.
Absolutely true. It was based on UCLA. They just did it phonetically and said, we're going to call this guy, this fake Wookiee of ours, we're going to call Ookla.
One of the all-time great cartoon character names.
Oh, we love Ookla the Mock and Thundar, of course. In the 90s, he also co-wrote Batman Mask of the Phantasm, which was the theatrically released movie version of Batman the Animated Series. So a great writer in the world of comic books, Martin Pascoe. Jerry Stiller was 92.
Ben Stiller's dad.
Ben Stiller's dad, absolutely. Stiller and Mira. That was Jerry Stiller and Ann Mira, parents of Ben Stiller. I think people mostly know Jerry Stiller these days from Seinfeld, of course. George's father on Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah.
And then he had a long run on The King of Queens after that, which I never saw. He kind of jumped right from Seinfeld into another long, successful run on another sitcom. His character, Frank Costanza, on Seinfeld, of course, the creator of Festivus.
Yes.
Yeah.
A holiday for the rest of us. But my favorite Frank Costanza moment, though, he was at a dinner and suddenly started screaming about, how come there's a chicken and a rooster and a hen? Something's missing. He had this bizarre argument over chickens.
He couldn't figure out what was paired up with what.
Yes. That was terrific. Fred Willard.
Oh, that was another really hard one.
Fred was 86, and even his age caught me off guard.
He just seemed kind of immortal.
Yeah, yeah.
Ageless, timeless.
And, I mean, he was around in the 60s, 50s, 60s. He was working in comedy and Second City and improv troupes and sketch stuff. But it really wasn't until the 70s with Fernwood Tonight, and then especially in the 80s, that he really came to prominence and suddenly he was everywhere. And then, man, he was more in demand than ever very late in his life. You know, in the 2000s, suddenly everybody wanted Fred Willard in everything because he just always delivered, always stole every scene he was in. I mean, Spinal Tap, you know?
Yes.
He has a quick little part in Spinal Tap. He's at the military base. He's a military guy. And he steals that scene, you know? How do you steal a scene from the guys in Spinal Tap? But he
beginning of his long long run in Christopher Guest films and hilarious in every single one of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the commentary guy at the dog show in Best in Show.
Yes.
Just destroyed the place. And yeah, Guffman and all of them. Somebody was talking about Fred Willard, and I can't remember who it was, if it was somebody on a podcast or something, and said, sometime in the 1960s or so, Fred Willard just disappeared into a character and never came out.
Yeah.
That's accurate.
He was that guy.
It was hard to get a read on him. Like, is he serious? Is he in character right now? Is he this sincere in what he's saying? And I know I heard Larry Miller, comedian Larry Miller, who also worked in a lot of those Christopher Guest movies, talking about Fred Willard once and saying like he was on in a car, like driving to the set or something with Fred. And Fred was like, Larry, I thought that breakfast at the hotel was really good today. That was what a terrific breakfast they serve at this hotel. And Larry could not figure out if he was being sarcastic or not. Like, he might have been doing a bit or he might have been genuinely delighted.
Pleased with
his breakfast. And there was no way to tell.
I have that same experience with you, Kevin. It took me years to figure out when you were being sarcastic.
Yes. The answer is always all the time. Yes,
that is the answer.
Yeah. Fred worked with Sid and Marty Krofft also. And in the late 80s, they did DC Follies. And that was Fred Willard working with a bunch of puppets.
Oh, I want
to
see that.
Yeah, that was cool. Remember Back to You?
Yes.
That was a really good sitcom like 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
That was Kelsey Grammer. And Josh Gad was in it. Fred Willard was in it. It was like a TV news workplace thing. And it was just like an A-list old-time classic sitcom. You know, the idea was like...
Yeah, I was sad that I didn't go further.
We're just going to get the best writers, the best directors, the best people, and just make a great classic sitcom, which they did. It was really good. And then it got killed by the writer's strike that year.
Yeah.
But he was great on that. And then just this past year, posthumously, we saw him in Space Force.
Yes.
The Steve Carell comedy series about the military branch Space Force.
I've been thinking of watching that. What do you guys think?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's. I mean, it's not the greatest thing in history, but it's.
It's not firing all cylinders, but it is. It is fun.
Yeah, a little uneven, a little hard to get a read on what Steve Carell was doing in it, but yeah, definitely worth checking out. And Fred Willard is Steve Carell's father in the show, so he kind of appears by telephone over the course of the series.
Okay.
So yeah, check that out. But man, we could go on and on if we tried to start relisting everything that we loved from Fred Willard. Take a drink, kids, for Ken Osmond, who was 76 years old.
Oh.
Ken, of course, the classic Weasley kid, the original Weasel kid from TV sitcoms. This is Eddie Haskell from Leave It to Beaver.
Aww. And we're slowly making our way through the whole series, and just every time, every performance he gives is note perfect, and he's so consistent with the character, you know, completely smarmy and polite to the parents, and then a complete weasel, like you said, when he's with Wally, and especially Beaver. He likes to give Beaver a really hard time.
And I mean, right out of the gate, like season one of Leave It to Beaver, you know, there he was, and he was, I don't know, 12 years old. He was a young kid, and
I can't even imagine that.
Was great in that part. Yeah, he was just so perfect and hilarious on Leave It to Beaver, and did not do a lot of acting after that. He became a police officer, and then eventually got back into acting for the new Leave It to Beaver. They did the sequel series in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that comeback.
Remember that? And that ran a long time. That was like a 4-year show.
I never saw that because I wasn't into the original show at the time.
If you never saw the new Leave It to Beaver, it's possible you never will. Because according to Jerry Mathers, when Jerry and Tony Dow, who, you know, Beaver and Wally, they were at Super Mega Fest a couple years ago. And Jerry said, nobody knows where the tapes are. We can't find the new Leave It to Beaver. Nobody knows where it is. Maybe it'll turn up someday. Let's hope. Sometime in the mid-90s, Jerry Mathers, who played the Beaver, and Ken Osmond, Eddie Haskell, made an appearance in Boston. So
you bet you went to see them.
I went screaming into Boston. I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to go meet Beaver and Eddie. And I did. They signed my book. I had a book about Leave It to Beaver, which they signed for me. It turned out my friend Mary Ellen, who I would not meet for like another 20 years after this, but she was also there that day. And I also learned that her name is Mary Ellen. And remember Wally's girlfriend on Leave It to Beaver, who was named Mary Ellen Rogers?
Uh-huh.
She's actually named after Wally's girlfriend, Mary Ellen Rogers.
Yeah, wow.
My head exploded. Ken Osmond, he was terrific. Al Rex was 91 years old, and this is another classic Rock and Roll Hall of Fame guy, so we just had to mention him. He was the bassist in Bill Haley and His Comets.
Oh.
So come on, just another one of those original rock and roll guys from when rock and roll was invented.
An old time great.
Richard Hurd was 87 years old and an actor in a bunch of stuff. He was in V, the original V series from the and movie from the 80s. He was John, the Visitor's Supreme Commander.
Oh yeah, I can totally picture him.
You know that guy. And also going back to Seinfeld, in more recent years, people know him as Mr. Wilhelm on Seinfeld. He was George's boss when George worked for the New York Yankees.
Ah. Oh.
Yeah. Here's one that we learned more about just this past year. Anthony James was 77 years old and a character actor. A couple of big roles that I knew him from, for one was in Unforgiven, the Western from Clint Eastwood in the early 90s. Anthony James played Skinny, who was the guy that owned the brothel that kind of kicked off the movie. That was Anthony James. More importantly, when I was a kid, the scariest movie I ever saw was from the mid-70s, a movie called Burnt Offerings.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about this.
Oh, yeah.
Bette Davis and Burgess Meredith. And this movie just freaked me out and terrified me as a kid. And the scariest thing in this movie is a character just named in the credits as the chauffeur. And he's just a guy in a chauffeur's uniform that shows up, doesn't even say anything. He just shows up in three or four scenes with this creepy smile.
It's just like he's a skeleton. He's like a human skeleton.
It's just weirdly terrifying.
Yeah.
There was a interview with him on the Blu-ray of Burnt Offerings, and it was actually a nice little kind of career retrospective interview with Anthony James. And it was nice to finally humanize this guy, because he's just been freaking me out for 45 years. Seems like a nice guy, so that was nice to see.
we saw him in one more thing.
Did we?
This year. He was in Return from Witch Mountain, the sequel.
Oh, yes. Yes, he was. Good call. I forgot.
And with Bette Davis, who was also in Burnt Offerings.
Yeah, they worked together a lot in the 70s, evidently. He retired from acting in the 90s after doing Unforgiven, and just became a painter. He just has been painting for the last couple decades, evidently. But nice. Anthony James, there you go. Cornflake, here's one that you requested that we make some room for on our giant, way too long list. How about teach us about Mary Pat Gleason, who was 70 years old?
Well, she was best known as Jane Hogan on the daytime TV show Guiding Light. Here's what's interesting about Mary Pat Gleason. She played a character here and there in just about every TV show you could think of through the 80s and 90s. It was just all these one-off performances. But she played Eunice Thompson in Quantum Leap. But then she played Eunice Thompson in Highway to Heaven. And she also played Eunice Thompson in Dear John. All of this in 1989. Now, Kevin,
weird.
These shows were not linked in any other way, were they?
Yeah, certainly not Dear John. goofy Judd Hirsch sitcom.
It doesn't stop there. She also played in a made-for-TV movie in 1990, Framed. She played Eunice, and she played Eunice in an episode of Night Court in 1990. So, I mean, she was in just like one episode of Sister Sister with Tia and Tamara. Remember when we couldn't remember their names? Step by Step, Coach, Saved by the Bell, Perfect Strangers, Full House, Murphy Brown, you name it. But in 1989 and in 1990, she was Eunice Thompson in like everything.
That's some fantastic TV trivia. I like that.
She was forever Eunice.
Yeah. I think the record holder in that category for playing the same character on multiple shows is Richard Belzer, because he's been the same character on Homicide and Law and Order.
Oh,
and,
show, yeah, like franchise.
All those crime cop shows, he shows up. I can't remember the character's name, but he's played the same character on like a dozen or so shows. It's ridiculous. But at least that makes sense because they're similar right. kinds of shows and he's that one character, but she's just being goofy.
I can just imagine her like, can I be Eunice Thompson? Just like everywhere yeah. she goes, because how else does that happen?
It's kind of a thing with me. I just have to be Eunice.
It's in her rider, I'm imagining. Yes. If you're going yes. to cast me, I have to be Eunice Thompson.
That's good. Bonnie Pointer was 69 years old. Of course, we're talking Pointer Sisters.
Yes.
Bonnie was a member of the group in the 70s, early through mid 70s, I think. And then she left to do some solo stuff in 1977. So she was not part of the group for that crazy run of hits they had in the early 80s. That was Ruth and June and Anita. But Bonnie was there for many years before that. And I think after they did some reunion stuff, it gets complicated after that. But Bonnie was in there, and Bonnie was there in 1976 when they did the pinball song for Sesame Street.
Oh, wonderful.
That's a great song.
They just counted to 12 again and again.
But they made it sound so good. I mean,
it was great.
Challenge anybody else to make a song where you're just repeatedly counting to 12 that good. And I defy you to find somebody who could do it quite like they did.
They did it perfectly. That was Bonnie Pointer. I think these days, the Pointer Sisters, it's Ruth and her daughter and her granddaughter.
Granddaughter, yes.
Wow.
That's the current version of Pointer Sisters, far as I know. But for a while, Bonnie was in there too. Take a drink for Denny O'Neill. Denny O'Neill was 81 years old, a comic book writer and editor that we spoke about earlier this year. In fact, I did an episode of Earth Station 1 all about Denny O'Neill. So he wrote Batman and Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and everything else at DC and at Marvel. He wrote Daredevil, tons of stuff. The Question, he had a great run on in the 80s. The character of Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul, Denny created them. Hugely important, influential guy at DC Comics. That was Denny O'Neill. Hey, you guys ready for another Bilbo? Because Sir Ian Holm was 88 years old.
Also a Bilbo.
Another Bilbo.
That struck me as perfect casting when I heard that he was going to be Bilbo. And then they pulled it off again when they cast Martin Freeman in the Hobbit movies.
Yes. So Ian Holm was in the Pete Jackson Lord of the Rings movies.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Brazil.
Oh, yeah. That's probably the first thing I noticed him in.
Sure. He was in Time Bandits. He was Napoleon in Time Bandits.
Oh, so that was the first thing I noticed.
I take it all back. Some fun stuff from Sir Ian Holm, our third and let's hope final Bilbo Baggins on the list. Joel Schumacher.
Oh, yeah.
Film director Joel Schumacher. And I just jotted down a few highlights of all the movies that he did. His first directing credit, I think, was Incredible Shrinking Woman with Lily Tomlin.
I saw that film.
Oh, me too. I went to the theater and saw that. I remember it well. DC Cab.
Yes.
He worked with the Barbarian Brothers.
Synergy.
St. Elmo's Fire. The Lost Boys.
Right.
Flatliners. Man, a couple of Kiefer Sutherland things there, Lost Boys and Flatliners. And then, of course, two Batman movies in the 90s.
Yeah, the two that we prefer not to speak of.
Not the most fondly remembered of Batman movies, but he did Batman Forever and Batman and Robin and a bunch more stuff. So important director, Joel Schumacher. Joe Sinnott was 93 years old, another comic book guy. Mostly known for his inking, considered one of the best inkers on the work of Jack Kirby at Marvel. And he did just tons of inking on Thor and the Avengers and Fantastic Four and all kinds of stuff at Marvel. He was working on the Spider-Man comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the newspaper version of Spider-Man?
Yes.
He was still inking the Spider-Man Sunday comic strip until last year.
Wow, he really kept on it.
I could not have told you that there still was a Spider-Man comic strip.
I met Joe Sinnott a few years ago at a convention. In fact, I have an Avengers comic book, Avengers number 251, you know, because we're obsessed with the number 251. Joe signed Avengers number 251 for me a few years back.
We are not obsessed with 251.
We all are.
You are obsessed with 251.
All of us. Joe Sinnott. here's one that we all know, and take a drink again. We got two shots in a row, because now we are up to Arnie Woo Woo Ginsburg, 93 years old.
A drink to that.
A Boston disc jockey, legendary radio guy, started in radio, I think, in the 40s, the mid-40s, I think, at the very latest, the early 50s. And he was a Massachusetts guy his whole life and career, I believe. But WMEX and WBOS, and he was one of those influential, important radio DJs, again, during the early days of rock and roll. Arnie Ginsburg was there.
Mm-hmm. He was fun.
He's credited with turning some certain songs into hits. Like, these songs were kind of not getting a lot of notice until Arnie Ginsburg started playing them, and then they turned into hits, and there's a few examples of that. A big one being the Monster Mash.
Oh,
Bobby Pickett.
Thanks a lot, Arnie.
Now, for our purposes, we know him best from V66.
Yes.
Because when they started the local Boston UHF channel version of MTV, when we had our own local music video station in 1985, Arnie was one of the founders, one of the co-owners of V66. And then, of course, when our friend Eric Green, director Eric Green, made the movie Life on the V, documentary all about V66, and the mayor and I were at the premiere of the movie at the Somerville Theater, mm-hmm. and among the special guests in attendance was Arnie Ginsburg. So we saw him that day at the premiere.
That's so cool that you get to see him.
That was exciting, seeing a Boston radio legend. Milton Glaser was 91 years old. He was a graphic designer, best known perhaps for the I Love New York logo, you know, with the heart on it.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I Heart NY. Yeah,
that was Milton Glaser. The most important credit of all his design work for our purposes, though, was at DC Comics. When Jeanette Kahn took over DC Comics in the mid-70s, she kind of wanted to do a facelift on the look on the brand of DC. And she hired Milton Glaser to design a new DC logo, which he did. And he did what, and they call it the DC bullet, because it's that kind of circle shaped thing that says DC in it. And he kind of, based on earlier versions that had been around before, but he took it and reformatted it and made the new DC bullet, which they started using in 1976, 77. And DC Comics used that same logo for almost 30 years. They did not switch to a new logo until 2005.
Yeah, he did such a memorable job.
It looks timeless. It does not look like a 70s logo. Right. And in fact, when they changed to a new logo in 2005, I think it was a mistake. Oh. Like, the Milton Glaser DC logo still looks timeless. It still looks great today. I think they could still be using it, and they probably should, because they've changed two or three times since then. Like, nothing's going to stick like that for long anymore. But there's Milton Glaser. Here's a guy that came up on the Flopcast a while back when we did a top 4.5 list of creepy songs.
Oh, no.
Because Benny Mardones was 73 years old. This is Into the Night.
Yes.
You know, she's just 16 years old. Leave her alone, they said.
Oh, right.
This was a hit song twice. This super creepy song.
Oh, no.
Bookended the 1980s. This was a hit song in 1980.
That's terrible.
And then in 1989, some DJ, it was not Arnie Ginsburg, but some DJ out there started playing it again. And it,
thank you for clearing Arnie's name on this one.
It caught on again, and it became a hit song again in 1989.
I remember that confusing me so much, because I knew I had heard it before 1989, and then suddenly there was this surge about it, and it was everywhere, but it wasn't a new song.
It was ridiculous. And yeah, that got Benny on a Flopcast top 4.5 list, so congratulations. She's just 16 years old. One more for this week, kids, and it's a big one. We're ending on a big one. We got Carl Reiner was 98.
And so sharp. Always such a funny guy.
Yeah, he was just, I mean, right up to the end, he was just always sharp, working. You'd see him on TV making appearances, always funny. He was still acting, like, in those Ocean's 11 movies, right? He mm-hmm. was in those, at least one of them, I think. Going back to the Dick Van Dyke Show, of course, you know, he created and would appear on as well. Like, Dick Van Dyke Show, it was about a team of comedy writers working for a show called The Alan Brady Show. So he would occasionally play Alan Brady on the show. Mm-hmm. And he just played it as like this clueless, pompous, arrogant idiot. And yeah, father of Rob Reiner, you know, so there's another comedy TV dynasty there. And he directed movies as well. And the big one for me was Carl Reiner directed The Jerk.
Yes.
One of my all-time favorite movies, Steve Martin's The Jerk. This came from Carl Reiner. Well,
that's a big one to end on. And
that's the midpoint of the year. That takes us through the end of June 2020. And I think we better stop because come on.
Yeah.
Because if we try to get through the end of the list now, well, I've been drinking. What?
Cornflake's about to collapse, so we better wrap this up. I will throw in a quick plug while we have the mayor here. We should mention there's another Patreon bonus episode of the Flopcast available now, Movies with the Mayor, in which the mayor and I watched The Beastmaster.
What, something that Kevin surprisingly had not ever gotten around to.
This was my first time experiencing The Beastmaster, and we made a goofy little show out of it, which is available for Patreon supporters of the ESO Network. So if you're part of ESO's Patreon, please do go check out the latest Movies with the Mayor extra bonus episode of the Flopcast. Other plug real quick is next weekend is Aresia. It's a science fiction fantasy convention based out of Boston, but this year it's happening everywhere because it's all online, January 15th through the 18th, and I will be there doing panels Saturday night, doing a panel about Saturday morning cartoons. And Monday afternoon, we're doing a comic book themed panel, 1986, the year nobody left the comic shop.
It would not be an Aresia without you doing a panel on Saturday morning cartoons.
We've done a bunch. We shall continue to do panels about Saturday morning cartoons because it's all we have. Cornflake, get us out of here.
I can do that. Flopcast.net is our website. Please don't forget to check that out. We're also at facebook.com/flopcast. We're on Twitter. Our handle is @flopcast. We're on Instagram, the_flopcast. Rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download the Flopcast. One more thing. This is important. Music is written and performed for the Flopcast by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Right before the Sponge Awareness Foundation released their first album, Bonnie Pointer quit the band.
Oh.
And we never fully recovered. Everybody, thanks for joining us for the first of our two memorial shows for 2020. We will wrap this up next week, of course. We'll reconvene and tackle July through December 2020, because lots more very important, very favorite people of ours that we want to pay our respects and celebrate. We'll do that next time. Meanwhile, everybody, please stay safe, be good, be kind, just be silly, and we'll see you next week.
Peace and cookies.
Bye now.
More positive than a New Day pancake. More fun than a super kick party. It's the Wrestling Podcast from the host, who is the hammer-swinging, burrito-eating, well, you know the rest, of Thunder Talk, Sexy Thor! It's the Ring of Thunder, found in the Thunderverse and among the great podcasts of the ESO Network.
Welcome back, everybody. If you're still with us, that means you made it all the way through to the secret after show. I just want to do a check on Cornflake. Cornflake, you've been sipping Australian wine all night. How are you doing? You hanging in there?
I found so many excuses for taking sips. I Uh-oh. Feel great. I've never felt this good after a death show before. Is that bad? I'm a bad person.
No, sometimes it's the only way you can get through it.
I'm glad you figured out a way to have fun with the memorial show. The secret all along, it turns out what we needed was Australian Shiraz, right? That's what you got?
Love it. But I got to say, I hope that there's a podcast out there like the Flopcast someday when we're...
For after we die?
Yeah. That can say nice things about us the way that we always do about the pop culture stars that have passed on.
What a bizarre thought to have.
Yeah, Cornflake's getting a little maudlin.
It's the wine talking.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping at the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.